episode of That's So Cincinnati. I'm here with my co-host, Burl Love.
It's not just another episode. It's the first episode of 2025.
Happy snow year.
Happy new year. Did you have a good New Year's?
It was kind of quiet, but I did that by design.
Yeah.
I like to do a lot of fun things. They don't have to be on day one.
Do you know what I did to mark the onset of a new year?
I think I do know, but
go ahead. I promptly got sick, like the worst sickness I've had that I can remember.
Did you have norovirus?
I don't know. I went to the urgent care. They ran off a test. I haven't heard the results yet.
Okay.
But they said, how long has this been going on? I was like, a week. And they're like, here's your Z-Pack.
I've known a lot of very sick people over the holidays.
Yeah,
I was sick going into the holidays.
I got it from my wife.
Oh,
I was 2 days behind her, so I knew exactly what was coming.
Okay.
Which made it even more ridiculous.
So I did go to dinner at Somm. So I do want, let me give some props to Somm. They had a prefix dinner.
You did that on New Year's Eve?
Yeah, at 6:30.
Nice.
At 6:30 at night, I was sleeping.
Prefix, is that French for super expensive?
It was not. It was $70.
It's actually French for fixed price.
So that's a lot. That's not cheap by any stretch of the imagination for a meal, but that's not normal.
Yeah, you don't really pick off the normal menu. They select a nice dining experience for you. Was it good?
It was very good. And so I was with very good friends, and that was a good way to start the new year. But I was asleep at midnight, and I was not sick.
Well, I made it. I mean, I stayed up and watched.
Okay.
It was like the 90s on Dick Clark's Rockin' New Year's Eve with Ryan Seacrest.
Yeah.
Alanis Morissette was amazing. Now, Lauren regretted that she didn't see her when she was on tour this summer.
Oh, it was amazing.
You went, didn't you?
It was
you?
A really good concert.
Yeah.
Way better than I expected. It really took me back.
I bet. Well, we digress. It's a brand new year. We have a very, very impressive guest to start off this first podcast of the new year.
It is, as all our listeners know, this is a city election year. So something I'll be watching really closely. Not that there's a shortage of other news, because there's so much news to start the new year. But Mayor Aftab Puraval, who is definitely running for re-election and not going to the Biden administration, is our first guest.
So what are you going to ask the mayor? So many things we need to talk about, right?
I mean, if you were in here, you would see that it's a whole paper list of things.
Well, this is your wheelhouse here, talking to the mayor who you cover day in and day out, week in and week out.
We are going to talk about two important things that we should talk about right now, because we are kicking off the new year with two pretty big stories. This is pretty much a record-breaking snow event for us, this two-day snow. So we're going to talk about how the city's been dealing with that and Paycor.
Big news from Paycor.
Is being sold.
Kind of out of nowhere, too.
Oh, but we were shocked when we saw it.
So let's start with that.
Okay.
All right. Paycor, not the stadium, the company that provides
software to businesses.
Yeah, support for everything from payroll to data management and everything like
Remember,
that.
Remember, we had Paris Parker on.
We did.
From Paycor, and that was a great conversation.
It's being bought. It's not going to be Paycor anymore.
It is. Well, we really actually don't know about any of the namings. It has been bought, though, and it's bought by a very synergistic company.
Easy for you to say.
Uh-huh. Paychex out of Rochester, New York, bought Paycor for $4 billion.
As reported by the other Coolidge that works at the Enquirer.
Yes.
A $4.1 billion deal. Paychex is going to take over, and we still don't know yet how that's going to affect some things here.
So there's two. So Paycor has really, it's come on the radar in the city. It used to be in Norwood. It left Norwood and paid a kind of a premium to get out of a lot of tax incentives it had out there. And it really made a presence for itself when it took on the naming rights of what was Paul Brown Stadium and is now Paycor Stadium. And they are building these new, very futuristic headquarters right, you know, right by Fountain Square in the middle of downtown that are like not your typical office. It's meant for remote work. They're actually not even getting any city tax incentives or anything to do this whole building in the old Saks. And so these two things are very important to our city, and we don't know really what's going to happen to them.
Well, what people will be wondering mostly is, well, two things. Is it going to be Paychex Stadium? Checks with an X,
which makes me think
of the snack mix, right? Checks, Paychex. Can you imagine Paychex Stadium?
No, it doesn't really roll off the tongue. Yeah. With the tongue.
And then back to the headquarters, the former Saks Fifth Avenue building where Paycor has been planning to move. We don't even know if that's still going to move forward, do we?
We don't. And 3CDC is really a no comment. If you think, I will say, and so is, I have to say, the Cincinnati Bengals. They're not even calling back, which is fine. Honestly, there's a lot of like non-disclosure type of things because of insider trading rules. You're not just allowed to be like, hey, Bengals, by the way, we might sell. We might be bought. You don't really talk about those things. Or, hey, 3CDC, guess what? We're thinking about selling or we're going to be acquired. They found out the news along with all of us when it kind of broke in Bloomberg yesterday morning. And then they put out all of the things themselves today that it actually was happening. And so I think everyone's trying to wrap their arms around what this means. For the stadium, I will say the Bengals do know what it means, because they know they have the agreement with Paycor Stadium. There's two parties that actually do know what's happening with that, and that's Paycor and the Bengals, because they have a contract together. And I would say this is kind of the biggest sub-story out of everything.
You're talking about the naming rights.
The naming rights, which we've talked a lot about on this podcast. So Alex is looking through, my husband, Alex Coolidge, our business like does a lot of the kind of acquisition reporting for us, that he was going through all their financials, and there it finally is, the mystery number. What were the naming rights worth? Because this has been a huge secret. They didn't necessarily have to say, but Paycor had to put out some statements to their shareholders.
All the disclosures, you knew it was going to come out eventually, not in the form of, you know, a buyout deal, but so
drum roll, please.
I'm going to do the drum already.
$67 million.
A bargain. A steal.
Really in line with some of the other stadiums at our size when you do a comparison look, which Scott Wortman, our county reporter, you know, when we were trying to guess what they might be worth because we didn't know. And we kind of thought 96-ish million, 100 million was kind of the guess. It is much lower than that. It is interesting in the way that if you look at that number, it is literally almost the threshold of what the revenue sharing with the county might have needed to be. Because, of course, the taxpayers do own the stadium, and there's a whole complicated math formula that I'm all too familiar with on how the naming rights would benefit the taxpayers. And we it's under that threshold that the taxpayers didn't get any money, keeping it a mystery. But now we know.
Well, when the naming rights were sold, we made a big push to find that out. The county commissioners, if you remember, acted like they were completely caught off guard. They didn't know. But it's really not, it doesn't sit in that government bucket that we have a window into. It sits in between the Bengals, which they don't have to disclose anything, and then a private company that bought the naming rights. So we speculated, and I do remember some of the estimates coming in at around that number. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't completely a mystery. You knew it was within the, let's say, $50 to $100 million range based on this market, based on what other deals have brought in other cities and things like that. But that's not a small chunk of change. That's a pretty significant investment that Paycor had made, what, for 16 years?
For 16 years.
So is it going to stay Paycor? Is it going to switch to Paychex? Is it going to be null and void with the takeover?
It does seem to stay Paycor. that paychecks, and there's so many details we don't know yet. We are recording this literally just hours after the first announcement. There haven't even really been interviews yet with some of these top leaders. But for it to stay Paycor, it does seem like it would have to. Paycor would become a subsidiary of Paychex, which it doesn't really seem like that's going to be. But does the agreement, what kind of buyouts does that look like? And if there is one, that you could pay some sort of penalty and end the deal, and then they could, you know, find a new naming rights partner. What does that all look like? We don't know. I don't know.
And Choir Stadium, perhaps? Maybe we could pass a hat around the next staff meeting, get some pocket change together.
It rolls off the tongue, Burl. I don't know.
Choir Stadium. All right. Well, you alluded to the weather. As we sit here, Cincinnati is digging out of one of the, I would say, most disruptive snowstorms we've had for a while.
Yes. So it hasn't snowed this much over a two-day period since 2008. And I did tell my son, who every time it snows, you know, he's like, this is it. We're going to go sledding. This is the one. Yesterday morning, I was like, this is the big one. This is, you've been waiting.
Don't miss this one.
He was born in 2008. I was like, you've been waiting your whole life for this. And not only did it snow basically like 10 inches, anywhere 8 to 12-ish we saw in this region. It's probably going to snow on Friday and Saturday, and it's not getting any warmer anytime soon. So we will be living with this snow for a little bit.
Well, it is pretty. I'll give it that.
Okay.
I like the snow. You know, people want to complain about it, but it just reminds you who's the boss, right?
Like the weather.
You think you got your schedule, you got your whole day worked out, and boom, everything grinds to a halt.
Yes.
I've got friends who their kids haven't been back to school, you know, for like weeks now.
That's everyone, I think. Even Oak Hills, where Jack goes, they're not known really to cancel. They did cancel this second day for Tuesday. I think everyone will probably go back on Wednesday the 8th.
All right.
It seems like.
We will see. Well, is it time to bring in his honor?
Yes.
All right.
Special guest time here on That's So Cincinnati. I'm pleased to welcome the mayor of Cincinnati, Aftab Puraval. Welcome.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on this snowy day, unfortunately.
Happy snow year.
That's right.
This is the first time I think we're talking in the new year, maybe?
I think so. Yeah. I think that's probably right. We shared some Happy New Year texts, but
we
in
did.
Person.
I didn't get a Happy New Year text from the mayor.
Oh, Burl, I only complain. I only text you when I'm complaining.
That's a long line of mayors that you're following in that regard. Actually, no, you've been a very civil, polite mayor, at least in terms of my perspective. So.
Thank you. Well, I do think that local news is so critically important. I mean, I'm not patronizing you guys, but I do try to be as reasonable as possible, particularly as it relates to accountability journalism, because it's important. But, you know, obviously there's every once in a while where I take issue, but have so far tried to deal with that with Sherry and some other reporters and not having to bring.
Well, we got a clean slate. It's 2025.
Let
the past be the past. Exactly. Look forward.
We are very much looking forward. And so I'm just going to jump off from there because we do have a lot to talk about. And
yeah.
As Burl and I talked about at the beginning of the podcast, we did talk about the snow. So you guys, we are going to let the mayor go after a half hour, 40 minutes. He's going to go help. He's going to go talk to the DPS snow.
That's right.
Snowplow drivers and everything. This is the first snow I've reported. And we know if you've lived, you know, like this since 16 years, this is the first significant snow we've had in a very long time.
Yeah.
Despite predictions every once in a while that we are going to get the big one. One time I rode around with the snow plows all night. We were supposed to get a huge snow with Meg Vogel, the two of us. We stayed up all night and did not snow.
You're just driving around putting salt on the roads.
I know. And in fact, if you don't want it to snow, I'm happy to do it again because that's how
you're
it goes.
The good luck charm.
One time during a very tragic, you know, history year was a high homicide year. And I spent the night in the ER. there were no homicides. Oh, so God. I'm here for people.
Well, let's start there. I mean, it's been a very difficult 72 hours here in Cincinnati and frankly, the tri-state. We're chatting today on Tuesday. Just trying to get our arms around around the snow event. You know, Sherry, as you've reported and just said, the most snow that we've seen in a 48-hour period, I think, since 2008, so a very long time ago. Our snow plows have been and our public servants have been working really since the snow started to fall, not just pre-treating the streets, but also trying to get the snow plows out there. I hear the frustration from the community. Not enough streets, particularly side neighborhood streets, have been hit. What we can say is that given that there is a pause in the snowing, our DPS crews are out there full force trying to catch up. Every large kind of weather event is a challenge. We're always trying to get better. We're always trying to have the staff, the training, and the public service commitment to get the snow, to get the streets as clean as possible and as safe as possible. That's our priority here. But it's a challenge when so much snow falls in a short amount of time. That having been said, as you mentioned, I'm going out to DPS to the Salt Dome after this to kind of try and rally the troops for the last push here to clean everything off. I'll be out there trying to help them where I can. But again, patience and trying to stay home if you can is the name of the game right now.
All right. Everyone does have to go to school tomorrow.
Yes.
That's the other thing people are complaining about, which you can't control, that the children have been home for a long time.
They
people
have. Look, I my kids have also been home. I've been, locked in my house with my two kids for the last 2.5 weeks. So I am eager to get back to work as well.
We love our teachers.
Yeah, exactly.
You were digging yourself out. So the Salt Dome, I have this picture of you rallying the troops at the Salt Dome with trucks lined as far as the eye can see, almost in formation, and you walking by. You're wearing your City of Cincinnati blue ball cap today, looking very official to go out to do something like this. How many, do you know off the top of your head, how many personnel are involved?
I don't. I'm going to try and hit as many as I can. We'll be in the truck driving around. I tried to do this particularly in the summer months with CDRT and SWAT that's deployed every weekend. I'll just walk around the bank shaking people's hands and telling them thank you. So hopefully there's a good crew out there. In addition to the DPS drivers, there's also a call center near the Salt Dome
Where 311 operates
checking,
out of?
Checking in. That's part of where 311 operates out of. So I'll be checking in saying thank you to those folks as well. There's thousands of city employees who work through the day and night, particularly when we're experiencing these crises. And oftentimes it can be easy to criticize, and we're always trying to get better, but they do an extraordinary amount of work, and I'm grateful.
So there are more than 100 snowplow drivers, and there's like 60 snowplows. So they are working around the clock. They work in two shifts, 7 to 7.
That's right.
And so they are tired. Because then it's not like the next day's easier. So they've had, the overnights have been tough.
Yeah. And to your point, sometimes it's an overnight and it doesn't snow. So these are folks who sacrifice a lot, particularly during the holidays. And we're grateful for them. But we'll continue to look, the streets aren't plowed yet, so we're going to continue to keep going. And hopefully my presence will give them an extra oomph. We'll see. I doubt
leadership
it.
Is.
That's right.
Big news stories, Burl's in the office with us. Right.
Exactly.
You see, I'm here today.
He sits at the desks right with us. And when the big news hits, like he's right there with us.
A man of the people.
Or I'm
good
in
job,
the way.
Burl.
I'm in the way.
You know I try how that not goes. To be in the way as well. Yeah, exactly.
So we have to shift gears.
Yeah.
Not in the plow, but like in a metaphorical sense.
Okay.
Because big news this week with Paycor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did anybody see that coming?
I didn't. No, I was not privy to any of those negotiations, was not aware that was going on. You know, my chief concern, Paycor is headquartered outside of the city, but obviously is in the tri-state region and has a huge impact on our local economy, given how many employees work there. In addition to that, obviously the naming rights on the stadium, plus the exciting news about Paycor having a physical location downtown in the old Saks building, where we have a lot of interest from, you know, restaurants and businesses. And it is my sincere hope that that transaction doesn't affect any of those plans. But at this point, no one's read me in on the details or what Paycor's long-term vision is for that downtown location.
Were they going to move their headquarters there from Norwood, or was that just going to be
It was going to be a downtown office with a steady presence of Paycor employees. And it's critical to our downtown vibrancy. You know, I've talked to you guys a lot about remote work, the pandemic and its impact on our local vibrancy, our walkability, you know, the fact that we need to continue to patronize our lunch spots and our small businesses downtown. And, you know, this $600 million that we're putting into the convention center, the reclaimed land directly west of the convention center, you know, obviously Saks, the Foundry continues to do well. Fountain Square continues to be the beating heart of our region. And that's why we've been really so focused on, you know, saving Carew Tower, getting the Macy's building done. And it's, you know, we're on the 10-yard line, I would say, on that project. And so I think one of the recent publications ranks Cincinnati second in the state for transitioning office space into housing. And so the more people that are living downtown, the more of those businesses and vibrancy is able to take hold. And that's why this Paycor project at the Saks building is so important.
Do you know what kind of impact it does have? Like, what does the employee count look like for the earnings tax?
Yeah, I mean, so far there's been no announcements as it relates to personnel or as it relates to the footprint of the new business. So we'll have to wait and see. Obviously, there could be impact from that. You know, the stuff going on, the stories kind of surrounding Alta Fiber right now is also something that we're keeping our eye on.
Do you know, what do you know about that? Anything? Because that broke last week and we haven't really heard much. But once it breaks, you could talk about it a little bit more. There's so many like non-disclosures. You can't talk insider trading and everything. But Alta Fiber, it seems to be kind of leaking out and everything. You haven't heard anything?
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that story as well. The only thing I know is what's been reported in the news. But those are, you know, I think it's important for our large employers to be local and to be owned locally so that we have more control over the direction of our local economy. I'm keeping my eye on those developments. We don't know that they're necessarily going to negatively impact us, but it is a question. And it's important for City Hall leaders to be on the very forefront so that we can switch our strategies, particularly as it relates to our urban core in our central business district. And so we will be kind of at the table trying to mitigate any damage. But again, we don't know that there will be any damage. It's just a lot of questions at this point.
That's where we're at. A lot of questions on this one.
So. Yeah. On really both of them. But they will both have some kind of an impact, either positive or negative, on the local economy.
How much of your time is spent on that part of the job, the economic development, knowing we have, there's lots of partners that you work with, but in terms of traveling and talking to businesses and things like that, is that, give me a ballpark percentage.
You know, I'd say there's a lot of different aspects of your question. So the traveling is like maybe 5% of my time. I mean, it's not a lot. I tend to only travel. Like, for example, we're going to Sundance in January. That's our final opportunity to
make the case,
final pitch, like full charm offensive. And it's been really inspiring to see so many aspects of the Cincinnati community, whether it's arts or film or the business community coming together, at the tourism community coming together to really try to bring that home. And so there's some traveling when it comes to those kinds of either bringing events to town or bringing businesses to town. But most of the economic development stuff that we do from City Hall has to do with deciding tax abatements, deciding whether they're going to get TIF dollars, using our development tools in order to incentivize growth, which is really the name of the game for City Hall leaders. If our city's not growing, then it's dying. And we've seen really exciting growth over even past the pandemic, showing that our population continues to grow steadily and that we've got a lot of momentum moving forward. I think the challenge continues to be, though, making sure that we're were making the getting the big decisions right. And the big decisions from my perspective, the railroad rezoning, the Brent Spence Bridge, the convention center, you know, to the extent we do an arena, those are big kind of inflection points in our city. About what kind of city we want to be in the future versus what kind of city we are today. And the sky's the limit. I genuinely believe that from an economic development perspective, given our transportation logistics strength, given our our tech ecosystem strength, you know, given the fact that the largest consumer product company, one of the largest grocers in the world, are headquartered here in Cincinnati, the fact that we have access to fresh water and that we're climate resilient, which are two factors that are driving a lot of the Gulf states populations into the middle of the country. These are long-term strengths that that should unleash an extraordinary amount of prosperity moving forward. But we have to continue to be diligent about economic development, getting those big things right. And so the travel is probably like 5%, but the actual economic development, meeting with Reddy, having a strong relationship with Jobs Ohio and the governor's office, meeting with state reps and state senators about attracting, you know, large events and large companies here, it's probably like, I would say 25% of my job. Most of my job is around basic services and specifically public safety. I mean, the gun violence is always going to be number one, and everything related to safety in the community is 24/7, 365. That really is the lion's share of the work.
So, knowing the nature of economic development, that, you know, it's a constant strategic priority. Meetings happen. And if meetings are happening, it's always too soon to make any announcement. But looking in your crystal ball for 2025, is there in the city's future a major economic development win coming this year, do you think?
I think
in terms of a, you know, a company coming in, a manufacturing expansion, something, anything. How's the wind look?
I mean, like I said, the wind looks really good. I mean, our Jobs Ohio, our Ready pipeline, even our DCED pipeline is really strong. More and more projects are coming in. I think the biggest economic development opportunities that we have in the short term are Sundance. I think Sundance is going to decide in the first quarter of next year. That's an economic development.
This year.
Yeah,
I know. We've been doing that all day.
I mean, I think that's an economic development huge win for a number of reasons. One, it's not just an event, one-off event where they come and then they leave. It's a commitment for 10 years, 2 weeks every single year, bringing in over 100,000 people to Cincinnati, maybe even bigger since we have more of an infrastructure footprint than Sundance does, Park City does, excuse me. And in addition to that, we've been talking so much about the brand of Cincinnati, the city. It changes our brand overnight. We are now one of the nucleuses of filmmaking, not just in the country, but the world. And given our strong history of the arts, it's really a perfect marriage. You know, I mentioned Carew Tower. We're very close to redeveloping Carew Tower, which would be, you know, Carew Tower is kind of the cornerstone of the city right there at Fountain Square. So redeveloping that, particularly with the macroeconomic factors that are challenging right now, would be a huge win.
What does the Carew Tower look like from the city's perspective? Because we have heard that it is being redeveloped into apartments, but does the city have any role in doing this?
Yes. I mean, the city, I'll speak for myself, we are very interested in effectively redeveloping Carew Tower. Now, there's two different aspects of Carew Tower. There's the kind of mall office space, and then there's the hotel. The hotel is separately owned, separately run. But the part of Carew Tower that we're really excited about is the office space and the mall and that kind of shopping area. And so,
remember when there was a real mall there, Pearl?
If we can get,
I do.
If we can get real retail there, if we can get real housing there, that would be a huge win right in the urban core. Again, bringing more people into our city to fight back against some of this remote work and to support a lot of our local businesses. You know, the other thing that's hanging out there is the arena. We had a really strong arena study that was done by the chamber in partnership with City Hall and also the county, CVB, and others. And it showed very clearly that we are missing an arena from an economic development perspective. I think the harder question, which is what we have to ask ourselves now, is how do we pay for it? There were a menu of options in the report, which were really helpful. Now the county and the city have to work together to figure out what is realistic from a capital stack and a stream of revenue perspective, what the public-private split is going to be. And the least important question to my mind is where it goes. First, we got to figure out if we can afford it.
Do you have a favorite spot, though?
You know, I think the two spots that make the most sense are Downtown West or the reclaimed land directly west of the convention center. It makes a lot of sense to me to double down on the $600 million investment into the convention center. The infrastructure is there because we can work with ODOT in order to pre-develop the site in order to make it as turnkey as possible. I think the downside is the timing. It's going to take about 7 years for the Brent Spence Bridge to be finished once shovels hit the ground. And so it's not clear to me whether that pre-development pad where the arena would go would be ready before the 7-year period or at the end of it. And so can we wait another 7 years before we get an arena, particularly given the fact that we're losing to our rival cities right now? I'm not sure that we can. CET is a really positive site because of the investment in the West End and the western part of OTR. It's really close to Music Hall and Washington Park, which are civic spaces that we really want to activate. But the challenge there is that the city doesn't control the entire site, and there's a lot of variables and X factors about whether we can get all the parties aligned to this specific project and whether we can get the West End community aligned to this specific project. So both of those locations have pros and cons. I really respect and trust the report from the chamber. What's most exciting to me about it is that it makes the case very effectively that not only is this an economic development loser at this point, the fact that we don't have a stronger arena bringing in stronger national acts, but it long term, again, it affects our ability to recruit and retain young talent who want to be living in a city that is attracting global talent, and that is the city that I aspire Cincinnati to be if we want to continue growing and continue winning on a national stage.
Do you feel like 2025 could be a year where we do see some sort of decisions on either the funding front or the location front?
Yes, absolutely. I think so. I mean, I think we have to decide this year whether we're doing it, how we're going to pay for it, and where it goes. Because I don't believe that we can continue to kick this can down the road. You know, I have really tried during my time as mayor to take on the sacred cows, to not kick the can down the road on the pension or the Brent Spence Bridge or the railroad, to make hard decisions that I think will be impactful in a positive way long term. And this is one of those kind of hard conversations that we have to have as a community around an arena. And I expect that conversation to happen in 25.
So one of the big things that is coming, this big shift, is the Trump administration. Is mm-hmm. We're going to have a new, federal government. What do you think it looks like for the city to work? You've had such a good working relationship with the Biden administration, yeah. And these projects really did come to, talking about the Brent Spence as the segue here, this is actually happening. What does the cooperation look like?
Yeah, from my perspective, the cooperation should be as close as with the Biden administration. Look, I'm a Democrat. I disagree with a lot of what President Trump's administration has said that they will prioritize and how they will govern. But this isn't about me as a person. This is about me as a mayor and how to strike relationships and partnerships with everybody in order to put the city in the best possible position moving forward. And that includes not picking political fights that I know we're going to lose just to drive some kind of national conversation or, get some clicks. What's most important to me is to have a strong, productive relationship with the Trump administration. We've got really big projects that we need to get finished. We need expertise at DOT and strong partners at DOT, at KYTC, and at ODOT in order to actually build this bridge. And and you know, taking on the political fight of the day is not, I believe, a strong strategy for City Hall. Now, having said that, when I disagree with the president and when there are, you know, real consequences at stake for Cincinnatians, then I won't hold back in expressing my disagreement. But I think you know, President Trump has been very clear about what he wants to do, particularly early on in his administration.
So let's just say what that is.
Yep, it'll impact immigration.
We're talking about immigration, and this is your family did immigrate to America. So it's something you do very much understand. What would you say? Because you're saying here that you don't want to pick a fight with the administration. They might ask you to do some very tough things.
Yeah.
Will you comply with those very tough things?
I will always comply with the law. But that doesn't mean that I will be quiet about it, right? So do I think it's a good idea to use our military in order to forcibly deport families? I don't. Do I think it's a good idea to take a hard look at violent immigrants, whether they're documented or undocumented? Of course I do. Safety continues to be our top priority, and we have to make sure that we're keeping our community safe. But there's the rhetoric that's been used by President Trump and his administration is inconsistent with how I think our city should be governed. Now, it's all just rhetoric at this point. Right now, the city of Cincinnati has no responsibility as it relates to enacting and effecting federal immigration law. And until that changes, we will not be involved. We have not been involved, and we'll continue to not be involved. But it just depends on what the law is. I will say when I disagree with the law, but you know, as mayor, I was sworn in on the Constitution and the Charter, and it's my job to also uphold the law and effectuate laws that have been passed. So it's a tough position for sure.
Does us being a sanctuary city even mean anything at this point?
You know, the sanctuary city conversation is more about partnering with ICE, particularly here in kind of local spaces. Under Cranley's administration, and I fully supported this and continue to fully support it, we became a sanctuary city. You know, I don't believe there's a huge impact on federal immigration enforcement because of that. But that will continue to be our stance until, you know, the federal law changes and requires us to participate or effectuate those federal immigration laws.
What would you tell residents who are immigrants here legally or illegally?
I think we have to be honest with our vulnerable communities, which is that President Trump has been very clear that immigration is a top priority. He's also been clear that he's going to first focus on violent criminals. You know, to the extent you are impacted by those policy decisions, I would encourage you to reach out to the Immigration Refugee Law Center. I'd encourage you to reach out to Catholic Charities, and I'd encourage you to reach out to City Hall, because there's resources and opportunities that we can connect you to further protect yourself. But you know, if the President of the United States, backed by the Senate and the House of Representatives, wants to do something as it relates to immigration, then they're going to do it. And there's no mayor in the country, particularly a mayor of a blue city in a red state, that's going to be able to do anything about it.
Do you feel like you have a good relationship with our two new senators, that Bernie Moreno and possibly John Husted, but we'll see. That decision is still hanging out there. We're waiting for that.
Yeah. You know, I plan to develop a relationship with Senator Moreno, excited about his opportunity to be a leader in the United States Senate. You know, we've really been blessed in Ohio with really strong senators, whether it's Rob Portman or Sherrod Brown. And the results of that have been, you know, you can physically see it around the skyline of Cincinnati. And so I hope that our next two senators are as strong, have the ability to navigate Washington, D.C. to the benefit of Ohioans and specifically Cincinnatians. And again, irrespective of political ideology, I want our Ohio senators to be successful, and I want them to be supportive of our local communities. And the fact that J.D. Vance is that I am his mayor, right? Hopefully will inure to the city's benefit, particularly as it relates to federal dollars.
How would you describe your relationship with the vice president-elect?
Yeah, you know, I've unfortunately not had the pleasure to meet him yet.
Really?
But he works the town almost
as much as you do.
Like, does he really? Yeah.
I mean, people saw him at Blink.
Seems
and
newish, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't met him. And as you mentioned, I try to be out and about a lot. Look, I'm hoping that he is successful to the benefit of Ohioans. You know, we're not always going to agree, but we do agree his kids are half South Asian. So my kids are also half South Asian. So we have a little bit in common.
And I mean, when we talk about it, it's also his Brent Spence Bridge.
That's right.
It's also, yeah. You know, these roads and bridges and everything are his roads and bridges.
Yeah. You know, there are still, even in modern politics, things that we can all agree on. And I continue to hope that the Brent Spence Bridge is one of those things.
So, as reported in the Inquirer, so it must be true.
Oh, great.
By Sherry Coolidge.
Okay. I don't know what this is.
You have no one right now who has stepped up for to take you on in the upcoming city election.
Mm-hmm.
It's been the first time for a while we've had no race for mayor. First question.
Especially this late in the game.
What are you going to do with all your extra time now that you're not going to have to campaign?
Well, I will campaign, irrespective.
Really?
I think it's important to earn the vote. I think it's important to be out in the community. The reason I'm out in the community, or I try to be as much as I am, is I don't want people saying, well, he only comes around when there's an election. It's important to me to be out there, and I'll continue to be out there. To the extent I have free time, as we were kind of chuckling about earlier in the interview, my five-year-old boy and my soon-to-be three-year-old boy kind of just gobbles up all the time, which is great.
They come to City Hall sometimes.
They're in City Hall quite a lot. My wife is a doctor with TriHealth, so she has a crazy schedule as well. So balancing all of those things continues to be a challenge. But I hope I get an opponent. I think it's important for Cincinnatians to have a choice. I think it's important for me to have the opportunity to talk about all the, from my perspective, great things that we've done over the last 4 years, and also be honest about some of the challenges. Gun violence continues to be a challenge. The lack of housing in our communities continues to be a challenge. We've tried to, the lack of infrastructure investment continues to be a challenge. We've tried to address those things with some really big swings in the first 4 years. And so far, so good. The returns on the railroad look really strong for the first year. And I'm hoping some of these longer term housing strategies like connected communities will unlock housing supply to drive some of these prices down. But there's been great successes. There's more work to do. And I think the city deserves that kind of conversation.
What do you think is a factor in not having an opponent? I mean, some would say there hasn't been a lot of controversy. That usually brings people out to challenge a sitting mayor. But there has been the railroad sale. Mm-hmm. More controversial, perhaps, than people anticipated it was going to be before all was said and done. Brought a lot of people out of the woodwork who had thoughts to share on that. You mentioned, the ongoing challenges that the city of Cincinnati proper has with crime, particularly youth on youth. But there's not really this defining line in the sand issue that the city is facing now that would maybe generate a field of candidates. What's your take on that?
I don't know.
Are you a boring mayor? Is that it? Is that?
Well, I try to be a boring mayor. I do try to be a boring mayor.
No, he's not.
I mean, I really do. I think context here is important. I am an accidental mayor. I mean, I was not, being mayor was not something that I aspired to do. It was not on my radar. And then because of the just overwhelming corruption of specifically city council, I was almost not forced, but it was almost I became mayor not because of any kind of design or really strategy. And, when I think about all of the chaos that we walked into and all of the drama, the overwhelming feeling I got from the community that I still get is, can we just get the work done and not have these petty personal attacks, obviously the corruption, all of the game playing, And I'm really proud of the fact that we came in, that we have changed the culture of City Hall, that it is far, that it is not transactional, that it is not petty, that you don't have the personal attacks and the sniping, that you don't have big controversies. And even the quote unquote controversies that you mentioned, Burl, they're all substantive, right? We do not have enough money for infrastructure. We're $400 million in deficit. We needed to sell the railroad in order to catch up on that, and also in order to guarantee our children and their children will have access to strong roads and curbs and city buildings. That isn't controversial because of some kind of ethics issue. It's controversial because it is about defining the future of the city. It is a line in the sand. I think connected communities is the same way. I think the convention center and the Brent Spence Bridge are the same way. You know, I think part of it is that we are boring and people want us to be boring. And I think the other part of it is that we haven't been scared to take on big issues. We've had the courage of our convictions to articulate why it's important to do it. And then we've put all of our effort behind doing it. And so there has been opportunities for the public to tell us that they disagree with us, while also maintaining civility. And I do think that those are factors that contribute to people being pretty happy with the direction of the city. I mean, there's, as I mentioned earlier, there's so many things that we have to get better at and need to improve on. But I think we're in a really positive trajectory and we've been getting the really big things right. And I think people see that and appreciate it. At least I hope they do.
And I meant boring not from a substance doing the work of the people standpoint, but no manufactured drama, no Gang of Five, no public debates, fights with city manager. I mean, it's been, I would say, correct me if I'm wrong, Sherry, there has not been a lot of unforced errors, I would say, under your administration. Do you think this gives you the opportunity to push harder because you're not, you know, you're not being challenged in this cycle of the city elections? You mentioned connected communities and some other things. Does this give you, not a blank check, but does this kind of allow you to say, okay, I've got the people behind me now.
I don't think of it in those terms. I really don't. I mean, you know, the kind of controversy, not controversy, but the criticism of me, particularly when I was running for mayor the first time, is that he doesn't really want to be mayor. This is a stepping stone. While I have said this until I'm blue in the face, that is not the true. In fact, I announced for re-election like a year after winning because of all of the gossip and the rumors. You know, the reason that is not true is because it is unlikely that I will have a chance to run for anything after being mayor. There's no paths for someone like me with my profile in the state of Ohio. And so this is it, Beryl. Like this is my chance to have a positive impact on my community as mayor. And so I don't look at it as, oh, I've got the public support or I don't. I look at it as I have a very specific small amount of time, either 4 or 8 years, to put points up on the board for the people of Cincinnati, not just right now, but long into the future. And I have been very ambitious and driven as it relates to finding out what the big issues are that will have a big long-term impact, and not being afraid of challenging our community to have the hard conversations and then move forward. Not taking my foot off the gas, I would say, based on this election and based on hopefully I win. But it's more about my lack of time in order to get things accomplished and how long it takes to get stuff accomplished in City Hall versus some kind of popularity contest.
You still having fun?
It's a great job. It really is. I mean, look, you know, people are rightly frustrated with the state of the roads right now. So it's not a popular time to be mayor. But there's just no, every morning I get up and my job is to make the city better. Like, how cool is that? I mean, it's so fulfilling. You have this huge opportunity to make positive change, but you also have the burden of maybe getting decisions wrong and maybe making things worse in a way that you didn't expect. But on the whole, this is the best job in politics. And you know, I it is hard on the family. It's hard on my kids, but I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world.
All right. I think I'm going to leave it right there because that is a very good ending.
What? You're not, you gave me the last question, Sherry.
Go ahead.
No, you already did. That was it.
Well, that's true.
And how do you top that one?
Didn't have a lot of chances to ask.
I got one more quick question.
Sure.
All right. Looking back, what would you ask for a do-over on?
Jabroni. I would not. That was a very quick answer. I would not have done that. That was.
I wasn't even going to go there because it seems like so long ago that the Bengals were, you know.
Yeah, but that was stupid. That was really dumb.
But I think you made that into a positive.
I hope so. I hope so. I'm a huge Bengals fan, and I hope we figure it out next year.
If my memory is correct, I think even Travis himself like came around when he came and did the podcast here, right?
They invited me to introduce them.
Yeah.
They were both really, couldn't be cooler guys.
See, I think that had a,
I'm a
that
had and they're a happy Ohio ending. Guys and they're UC guys. I mean, right. I'm a big fan of the Kelseys and, you know, I was talking about Patrick, but anyway, it was a mistake for sure. Yeah.
All right. Well, with that, we're going to let you get on a snowplow.
Yeah.
I still have this vision of you almost like, you know, industrial area, like lines of trucks and you walking by and saluting all the drivers.
It's less inspiring than that, I promise.
Well, don't burst my vision of this here. I think that would be cool.
Fair enough.
All right.
Well, I'd rather they be out on the streets plowing than hearing a speech from me, but hopefully I'll be able to get a couple of them.
All right. Rally the troops and thank you for your time.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Well, Burl, I don't think there's going to be any shortage of news this coming year. I'm excited to see what's next for everything.
It is going to be a busy year.
Yeah.
And it's just getting started.
I wouldn't have it any other way, honestly.
So, Sherry, you talked about your New Year's Eve dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Where else have you eaten that you would recommend?
So Alex and I did do a date night by ourselves.
No way.
We did. I know.
not that I'm surprised that you went out. When you say a date night by yourself, usually people mean they went without their kids. But this is even more remarkable for you because you two are so social.
I'm a merrier kind of person.
Yes, you go out with like a pack of people, like your posse.
So
it was just you and Alex?
It was.
What did you do, just stare and look at each other?
And we work a lot. Uh-huh. So like the last time we went on a date, we went to Memorial Hall. Like before Christmas, we went to Memorial Hall, which is incredible space. And we saw a jazz trio performed the Charlie Brown music. It was really incredible. But at the end of that, we wrote a story together. And so our lives look like that a lot. We wrote the Paycor Stadium stuff together last night. And so that's just what we're like. So we go on a date and I was like, you know, he doesn't care. He's not like, what places do you want to pick and everything? So it is interesting because Keith came out with his restaurant list. I chose this restaurant beforehand. So we went to Colette. And then shortly after that, our food writer, Keith Pandolfi, just an expert in all things food. It's just, I actually feel privileged to get to talk to him about these restaurants when I sit next to him in the newsroom, came out with the top 7 restaurants. And he ranked them, which I'm sure is a very difficult task. But Colette is on that list. It came in at number 3 for him. But Colette is so romantic. The food is incredible. And it was pouring down rain. It was like a cozy little night. It almost felt like we were in Paris as much as we could. And we had a great night.
Well, I have been there.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really good. It is operated by a local guy who grew up in Northern Kentucky. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, he sort of cut his teeth through the Cincinnati restaurant scene before going out on his own. I was pretty impressed with myself because I've been to 3 of Keith's 7 recommended new restaurants.
Oh,
so I've been to Colette.
Okay.
I've been to the Davidson.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Twice for dinner and lunch. They were open for lunch. I think they still are. Experimenting with the lunch service for downtown, which is fantastic. And then the Aperture.
Oh, I've not been there.
You need to go.
That's our next big one. We don't spend a ton of money on going out to eat. Just, but we have, with all of the restaurant closures last year, that is what prompted me to say, I do want to do this because I want to support our local restaurants. It's important. I'm always on a diet. So it's like those two things kind of don't really gel together. But I do believe if you don't go to do the things, if you don't go to the concerts at Memorial Hall, then you don't get to have them anymore. And you don't go to these amazing restaurants, and we're not going to get to have them anymore. I mean, I think the most shocking thing about the restaurant scene over Christmas wasn't about these amazing local restaurants, it's that Morton's is closing.
Well, I'm not too surprised. It just hasn't had that buzz anymore. Like, I don't know.
I was a little tired inside, I think is a fair description.
Well, when I talk to people about, you know, hey, where'd you go out to eat? People don't really mention Morton's anymore. And it is, you know, it's kind of an upscale chain. It's not like an independent.
It was. You could always get a good meal in there, and you could go there and get in.
Which right. Well.
Not ideal. Not ideal.
Unlike the other steakhouses in town, where if you want to a reservation, you need to be a few weeks at least out in advance.
No, 100%.
Anyway,
I want to rhapsodize real quick over something new at Colette, and I want to encourage you to go, especially since you didn't go out for New Year's.
Yeah.
I'm sure Lauren listens to this. Love you, Lauren. But you should go to Colette and like just redo New Year's.
Okay.
But they have something now. It's called butter service.
Butter service.
I cannot say enough amazing things about this. So they source butter from a farm in Vermont. And for many years, they stopped at four restaurants. I will say the restaurant in the Bear has referenced this butter. It is known in the restaurant world as something just absolutely amazing. And the chef at Colette wore them down. And we are the fifth, according to our waiter, we are the fifth restaurant now to get this butter. But they had like crusty rolls from Blue Oven, which is many
nice
bread from many restaurants around here from that amazing bakery. But the butter, I can't, like, it really is something special. And so, and on the menu, they still have those like brioche rolls that are incredible. It was very like Sophie's Choice kind of pick. Like, can't get two kinds of bread. Do you get the brioche rolls or do we try this new butter service? And it was really incredible.
Butter service. Mm-hmm. Lauren will be into that. She loves her butter. She bought a big chunk of Amish butter at Jungle Jim's.
Oh.
And has like been hoarding it. Like it's her private stock. So I think she'll be all about the butter bar.
It's worth it.
Or the butter service. It's
just to go, yeah.
Speaking of good restaurants, we hadn't been for a while. And this was back when we were trying to do holiday experiences. We ended up at Le Bar au Boeuf.
Oh, I love that restaurant.
Bar. Yeah. I think people forget about it sometimes. It's still there. It's still great. They have amazing bread, so much so that I said, all right, you got to tell me who's doing your bread. And they wouldn't tell me.
Oh, well, they don't want other restaurants
to
know.
They don't want other restaurants to know.
And
yes.
Of course, famously.
But I know it's from New York. Like they're getting it from a New York bakery. So that narrows it down to what? 50 possibilities.
That is.
But it was a great meal.
So we are very lucky to have these restaurants. And you guys, again, we have to go to them so we can keep them.
And with that, should we wrap things up, Sherry?
We definitely should.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to this week's episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast, a production of The Enquirer and Cincinnati.com.
If you enjoyed the podcast, please give us a rating and share it with a friend who loves all things Cincinnati.
And finally, if you value local journalism, and I know you do, and haven't subscribed for full digital access to Cincinnati.com, now is a great time. Just go to Cincinnati.com and click on the subscribe button to see a special offer just for you.
Thanks again. See you next week.